is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Another Monday edition of the John Murphy Show, and Chris Brown is in John Murphy's chair again. Hi, everybody. Here with Donald Jones as we get another week started. Closing out June. Summer is flying by, and I am not liking it.
I know.
Because, as you know, our summer is over in a month.
Right, exactly.
So, effectively over in a month when we all go to training camp.
I always say after 4th of July is downhill from there.
Yeah, you're right, because you can feel it coming.
Exactly.
There's this foreboding sense.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like when you were a kid and you're into like August 15th, 16th. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, man,
right.
September's coming real fast. Now it's you get through June and then you get through the July 4th holiday. You're like, son of a gun, it is almost over.
And it's, you know, for us, it's bittersweet because football season is approaching. But that means...
Which is fun.
Right, which is fun, but that means summer is over, you know? So it's like, oh.
The only, I will say, the biggest perk for me with training camp is you're working outside.
Oh, yeah.
And you're wearing shorts to work.
Yes.
Those are the two biggest perks for me with respect to training camp in that time of the work calendar year. But, yeah, I'm in for Murph all week, so I know you're going to be stepping aside soon,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have Steve Tasker in here with me later in the week, and that'll be fun, too. And believe it or not, even though this is the quote-unquote dead period of the NFL.
There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. Stuff we can certainly dive into head first, and we plan to with you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, and... We should mention, we'd be remiss if we did not mention, that we do have probably one of the biggest guests we've ever had on the show. Big in terms of size and stature.
Is that literal?
Figured
it. He is a big man.
Ted Washington is going to be joining us at 1 o'clock. And I haven't seen Ted, let alone interviewed Ted, probably since the 1999 season.
You know, he was leader of the charge. This past year.
I know he was in town.
Yeah.
But I didn't get a chance.
He was leader of the charge. And I remember I talked to Murph. I'm like, man, I hope they reinforce the walk up there that he has to stand on or whatever. Because
You better have an extra extra couple of
layers of steel or something up there.
Get a few extra studs in the frame.
I met him upstairs in the suite. And I was like, yo, like just looking up at this dude, like, man, that is a big
dude. He really
dude.
Is a mountain of a man. Like in every sense of the word or the phrase or the description. I mean, he was then, he is now. He's just a gigantic human.
He's bigger now. Anybody in the league now would compare to him in stature, you think? Defensive tackles.
Who, I don't think that guy exists in the NFL anymore. I really don't. I mean, this guy was, the biggest laugh was in the media guide. He was listed at 325 pounds. And I'm just telling you, dollars to donuts. There's no way this guy was 325 pounds. I mean,
well over four. Closer to four.
I would say his first few years here, he probably played somewhere between 350 and 365.
Gotcha.
And then once we got to 98, 99, we're pushing the envelope on 375, 380. The crazy thing was he was still effective.
Mm-hmm.
And to be moving all that weight, carrying all that weight, and making those kinds of plays, it's interesting. And I want to talk to him a little bit about the early part of his career. I mean, this guy was a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
And he had trouble getting on the field in Denver. He wasn't really living up to expectations. And then he came here, and it's like, shoom, his career took off. He's going to Pro Bowls. And I want to know, when we talk to him, you know, and one of the main reasons we're going to be talking to him is because we're going to be talking about the next episode in the Buffalo Bills Entertainment television series, Top 10 series, is going to continue again tonight on MSG at 9 o'clock, and it's the top 10 defensive players in Bills history.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to God, he's on that list. And we'll find out tonight at 9. I can't see how he would not be.
Yeah.
Because he was just such a dominant player. I mean, there was just no answer for him inside. And if you did not double-team him on every play, you were just going to have a mess of a day offensively.
We talked to Marlon Kerner about him last week. And, you know, we asked Marlon, out of the guys that you played with, who would you love to see on this list? Who deserves to be on this list? And he was like the first person he said, you know, he was like, dude, it was so fun to watch this dude just eat up double teams in the front and open things up for everybody else. But he was like, he was a mountain of a man. You could not move him at right. all. And he said it was just fun to watch him because he wasn't just a guy who ate up double teams. He also made plays in the backfield. You know, he was able to move around. And for a guy that size, it's just fun to watch.
And I'm not going to take anything away from Sam Cowart. You know, in the brief time that he played here, injuries kind of compromised his career. He was a talented player in his own right. But he went to a Pro Bowl because of Ted Washington.
Yeah, like, right.
And John Holosek had career years here because of Ted Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Because that guy just tied up two people, and those guys got the most open looks a right. linebacker could ever have to go run and hit and tackle ball carriers.
This is why, you know, we talked last week. I mean, we talked about Marcel a lot. I believe Thursday or Friday. And Marcel is that guy who will eat up double teams. If he is healthy and playing like Marcel Darius, he will eat up double teams
he
and
should,
open things
yes,
up for everybody else.
He should dominate the game similar to the way Ted would dominate games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary to think. You know, I think it gets overlooked, and maybe it's partly because the team only had limited success when Ted was here and really firing on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you had Phil Hansen, Ted Washington and Bruce Smith, two of those guys are on the Wall of Fame. I think you could make a case for Ted, to be on the Wall of Fame. And then they had Bryce Pop as an outside linebacker.
Yeah.
He was Defensive Player of the Year here one year. I think he would lead the league in sacks another year. Excuse me. And so you think about just those four alone, and then you roll in Sam Cowart, and Holosek was kind of a lunch pail player that was productive. I mean, that front seven was killer.
And Cornelius wasn't here with Ted?
I'd have to look it up. I think he was here. Well, he played here for 8 years. His first year was 87. 88, 89, 91, 92, 93, 94. His last year here. And Ted wasn't even he eventually was a full-time starter. But his first year here, he kind of came. He played.
Right.
They rotated him out. So I think they only played 1 year together. So yeah, they really didn't have a chance to team up, so to speak. But that, I mean, even though Bennett had moved on, that defense was number one in the league in 99.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason they won 11 games that year. I mean, they were winning games 13-10. Flutie was playing quarterback, you know, and you had some guys on offense, but they were winning games because of their defense. I mean, we're in 13-10, 17-13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of those eke out kind of games because their defense was just locking it down.
And yeah.
He was such a big reason why. So we'll be talking to Ted at 1 o'clock. We're excited to get him on the horn and talk to him a little bit here on the John Murphy Show. You know, and we want to kind of get into the top 10 defensive players of all time. And I know, I realize some people are going to say, well, number one's a no-brainer. And I think it is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any question who the number one defensive player of all time in Bills history is. It's the only defensive player who's in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bruce Smith, duh, you know.
Right.
I mean, leads the league all-time in sacks with 200. I think he's got 11 Pro Bowls. I think he was a 9-time first-team All-Pro, which is, I mean, that's might be
ridiculous.
The most insane statistic
yeah,
of his entire career. 200 sacks is great, but to be a first-team All-Pro, like, 9 times?
I don't
times,
think people understand how good that is.
That is,
I mean,
really
to make a Pro
hard
Bowl
to do.
Is hard. But once you get in once or twice, you know, you're going to keep going. But to be first team all pro 9 times, that is it's hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's just stupid. It really is. I mean, nine.
That's hard to do.
I mean, some guys don't even play 9 years,
right.
You know, at a top level. I mean, this guy,
this guy is one of the best defensive players in the history of the NFL.
And I remember, you know, I talked to Marcellus Wiley, who tried to learn from him when he was a young player near the end of Bruce's career, and he was here with him. And Daryl Talley tried to watch Bruce on tape to figure out why he was so successful. And they basically just came to the conclusion that what Bruce could do with his body, especially in terms of bending the corner, like he'd be, they said it would look on tape like he was scraping the ground with his inside shoulder when he was bending the corner. Wow. Like that's how low he could get while his legs were still going at full speed. That is like,
that's crazy.
You're defying gravity, physics, you know, the area under a curve, any mathematical formula you can come up with, the Pythagorean theorem, whatever you want to throw at it. It's just not humanly possible for about 99.9% of the population. And then to see him get that shoulder so low for being a 6'5" human being and get it under the shoulder of a left tackle, it's not right. It's not human. It doesn't seem humanly possible. And that's what, you know, Marcellus, I remember I was interviewing him. I said, okay, you know, what have you learned from Bruce? And he goes, well, you know, I've learned a couple of things about hand usage and keeping offensive tackles hands off me, you know, to make keep myself free and able to do what I want to do and make the first move or even the second move. He said, but, you know, I'm trying to copy some of the stuff he does around the edge. And I've, after a year and a half in the league, I've come to the conclusion that I am physically incapable of doing that.
Yeah.
And he goes, and I'm not the first, and I won't be the last to watch Bruce Smith film and determine, I just can't do that.
And there are guys, though, that do certain things on the field, and you're just like, how is he doing that? I can't. I used to watch certain guys film, even Stevie, you know, the way Stevie moved around, and I'm like, how are you able to run, like basically jog a 5-yard route the way you just ran it? And come wide open. You know, I never could understand how he was able to do the things that he did on the field. They're just guys that play the game different, and it works for them, and they become a dominant player.
Yeah, and that, I think Stevie's approach was more because it was more of a unique approach to route running. He basically took one-on-one basketball and kind of applied it to route running.
Exactly.
Which, for some coaches, would drive them completely insane. Because they want to control as much as possible. They have timing offenses. And here you got a wide receiver where it's like, well, is he going to be there on time?
Right, exactly.
When the quarterback's ready to throw? I'm not sure. I don't know. And that's kind of what wrote Stevie's ticket out of town when Doug Marrone got here.
Yeah.
Because Doug Marrone was a control freak in every sense of the word, wanted to control every aspect of the offense, the defense, and the special teams that he could, regimented to the point where it was almost robotic, believing that that would reduce error, make them more efficient, and thereby more productive on the field. I get the theory, but that's not Stevie.
It wasn't Stevie.
And what made Stevie Stevie was his ability to completely improvise. And fortunately, he had a quarterback
who was
smart enough to kind of recognize some of the intricacies and nuances of his route running and was able to manufacture production out of that regardless to the tune of 3,000-yard seasons, which is remarkable when you think about it.
We would train together, you know, sometimes Arizona, sometimes in California, and I would try to do things that he was doing, you know, like I'd watch him run a route and then I'd try it. And I was like Marcellus, like, you know, I just can't do it. Like, I don't move that way, you know. And that's part of the reason, along with the fact that Stevie never really worked out, but part of the reason why he always had
those. I just can't play basketball all summer, and I'll be in shape.
Trust me, he did.
I know he did. He told me he did. You were the only person he told you.
Yeah, he definitely just played basketball. But part of the reason why he had so many groin issues, because of the way he played the sport, you know, and the way he jerked his body. It's just, you're not supposed to be able to do that consistently without having those issues. He plays basketball the same way he ran routes, you know. So, but even watching a guy like Revis, and Revis would tell you, I just didn't know how to, like, I didn't know what to look at with Stevie.
Because there's no tendencies
with
him. There were no tendencies. You couldn't watch film and learn or have advanced scouting on what he's going to do on this play, because he never ran it the same twice.
Right, ever. Like, ever.
You know?
But watching, even watching Revis, though. Like, I would watch Revis sometimes and be like, how did he do that? You know, against some of the best receivers. I mean, he was, for years, the guy, he locked down the best receivers in the game.
And I would equate Revis's ability to Bruce. I wouldn't put Stevie in the same class as Bruce.
Right.
Stevie just had a unique approach to the game what Revis and Bruce have are just ridiculously rare athletic ability. The way that Revis was able to just turn and run with guys was so effortless. Because, you know, what you teach receivers, and you certainly know this more than I do, but like people say, well, how the hell was Marvin Harrison so effective as a receiver when he's so small and in stature and stuff? He would get up on a defensive back's toes so fast, he would force them to decide, make a decision, am I staying here and pressing him, or am I going to flip my hips? And he would make them uncomfortable because he would get up on their toes so fast, he'd force them to make a decision. And they're like, well, I don't want to get beat for an 80-yard touchdown, so right. I'm going to flip my hips. And then he'd break the route off, and it's 15 yards and a first down. And you're like, well, dang it, man, I got it. So then you go press, and then, boop, there's the sluggo route, and he's gone.
Exactly.
And that's why he was so effective. So, you know, you think about Revis, it was just easy. It was easy for him.
Easy.
And for Bruce, it was the same thing. Now, that doesn't mean that Bruce didn't work hard. He did. I think we've seen Revis in the last couple of years, as his rare physical skills have started to diminish, he did not put the work in to prolong his career and keep it at the level that it had been at previously. Whereas guys like Rod Woodson, you know, even though they made a position switch, still were committed to the work ethic necessary to lengthen his career. He played 7-8 years at safety at a Pro Bowl level. Charles Woodson, the same thing. So
when something comes, there are certain guys that will do things on the field and they just make it look like they didn't put any effort into it.
Right.
And they can do that for so long while they're young, you know, but then, like you said, as they get older, and they never really had to work as hard, you know. So if you're not a person that's just ingrained in you to work hard, work harder than everybody else because everything is coming easy, once that time comes where your skills – you don't have the same skill set, you can't move as fast or as quick as everybody else, you have to be able to put the work in. Now it's like your whole mindset has to change, and Revis just never turned that part on, you know.
And that happened to Aaron Schobel here, too.
Really?
Because Aaron would get in shape to make weight so he wouldn't get fined and lose money.
Just here so I won't get fined.
Yeah, you know, but he was like a 255, 260-pound defensive end in a 4-3, and he was an effective player, used to get 8 to 10 sacks a year. In the offseason, he'd go home to Texas. His parents owned a diner. Ooh. I mean, that dude would balloon up to 290. Mm. And then he'd have to lose 30 pounds in July and get to camp and make weight, which he would do, but it wasn't because he was, you know, working out like a fiend. He hated working out. That guy knew what color the walls were in the weight room, it was something, you know. And he had a 50-50 shot at it. It's probably red or blue. You know,
that was Stevie, man.
That guy was never in the weight room. So his career was only 8 or 9 years long. It could have been longer if he took care of himself and stayed in shape and did the right things. It could have probably been a 12-year career because he rarely had injury problems that kept him out for a long period of time. But as he got older, the natural physical abilities that he had started to diminish ever so slightly. And because he didn't back that up with the proper work ethic to stay in tip-top physical form, you know, you lose half a step in this league, it's noticeable.
Right.
I mean, there is a big difference. It doesn't seem like much, but you look at the stat sheet, you look at production, you look at one-on-one battles down in and down out, you're losing a lot more of those than you're winning just by losing a half step. So it's a decision that a player like that has to make. And I think more often than not, they say, well, forget it. I'm just going to pack it in because I don't want to put in the work because I never had to before. Why am I going to start now?
Yeah.
You know, and the money sometimes, if they've made their money, I mean, Revis has made his money.
Lot of money.
The motivation isn't there. It's just not there.
A lot of money. Now, Bruce was a guy who worked like all throughout his career.
Yeah. Well, I mean, early in his career, it wasn't there. You know, he was a chubby defensive end. I mean, he was almost 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And then something happened in 88. He had the drug suspension. And then something just clicked in there where he just said, I'm going to be the best ever, and just set himself to that mindset, and it never wavered after that.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy broke Stairmasters here. He blew through two Stairmasters.
Really?
Yeah, the strength and conditioning coach, he was madly searching, like, the market for something that was more – sturdy and able to withstand the rigors because he would be on that thing all day. He burnt the motor out of two Stairmasters.
That's crazy.
In, I think, a span of two seasons.
That's crazy.
That's right.
You know, people who've been on the Stairmaster, you want to get off.
The Stairmaster usually wins.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. So you'd have burned the motor out of one or two. I mean, that's crazy. But, I mean, even a guy that we talked about last week, a guy who's on this team now that had a chance to be on this list in, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 years, and the first person everybody said was Kyle.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been a guy who does work. And that's because he's a fifth-round pick. You know, he's smaller for a defensive tackle. He's always had to work, but he still works to this day. Now, he's made his money, so he doesn't really, you know, he just loves to do it. He loves to play the game, and he loves to work out. You see him in the gym, he's still getting it in. And that's why, you know, I think Kyle will be on this list at some point.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The debate we want to throw at you today is knowing that Bruce is, I mean, if he's not number one, you know, there should be people with torches and pitchforks coming down to One Bills Drive. I'm not worried about it. I mean, there's no way. He's the only Hall of Famer. He's going to be number one. I think that's going to go without saying. The question here today is, who's number two?
Yeah.
I think that's a fantastic debate because I don't think there's an easy answer there. You've got a list of guys that I think merit consideration for number two on this list for top 10 defensive players in Bills history. Bruce is number one. Who's number two? You got a handful of guys I think you can make a case for to be the number two defensive player in Bills history. Who is it for you? We want your candidates at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. I mean, I think there's a bunch of guys you can choose from. There's a handful of them on the Wall of Fame across the parking lot from us. And I think there are guys with credentials that you say, you know, this guy is good. This guy, is he a little bit better? You know, what are this guy's accomplishments? The crazy thing is you look at some of the guys on the list that at least that I would consider, and I'm trying to check their credentials in addition to the kinds of players they were for the teams they played on, and five Pro Bowls keeps coming up. You know, you think about even Kyle Williams. He's got five Pro Bowls now.
Five Pro Bowls.
So he hasn't been on teams that have been successful. Where does he fall? I don't think he's probably a number two all-time guy. I would probably put him on my top 10 list, though.
Right now?
Yeah, I would put him on the top 10 list. The guy we're going to talk to at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Where does he fall? He's got three Pro Bowls on his resume. I mean, Ted Washington had 130 tackles in 1996 as a nose. How many nose tackles have 130 tackles in a season?
Man, what? Were they just running right into him? Like, what? Let's just run into
the
biggest dude.
And then he had 124
the
next year.
That's
so 1996, second year with the Bills, he has 130 tackles. And then the next year, he has 124. Now, with all due respect, the defense was on the field a lot those 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did go to the playoffs in 96. They had a home wild card game, lost to the Jaguars. That was Jim Kelly's last game of his career. And then the next year, they go 6-10. That's Marv's last year. Again, defense on the field a good deal. So you can understand maybe the numbers are somewhat inflated by that, but you can't fault Ted Washington for being on the field and making plays.
And making plays.
So, you know, for me, you know, you look at those numbers for a nose tackle and a 3-4, where his job is to tie up two guys and let the linebackers rack up the stats. This guy had 124 tackles and 130 tackles in back-to-back seasons. I mean,
now, did he come out? Was he a guy who rotated?
Not much.
That's what, like, so for not a dude much. His size.
I mean, third down, obviously, obvious passing situation, he would come out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy they'd roll in would be Pat Williams. Pat Williams would come in. And then in 98, you know, and 99 when Wade Phillips is sitting there going, oh, we got – this Pat Williams kid's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was undrafted.
Yeah.
They put him and Pat on the field at the same time on, like, first and second down. It's like Bruce Smith, Pat Williams, and Ted Washington. Like, really? And then Phil Hansen over there, they'd have, like, a four-man front. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Try running on that.
Shoot, if I'm Phil,
they
I'm
called
like,
them the
yo,
package.
The package.
Ted and Pat. They were the package. Because
Phil had to be sitting on the side like, yo, this is great. Like,
oh,
I got Bruce. Ted,
I'm
going to
be singled up
day. I'm just single. Let me go. You know, like the, and he did. He did his thing. When you have that opportunity, you have to do your thing. But a guy like Ted, man, to be that size, I don't know if people, you know, if you ever had a chance to stand next to him. You see him out on the field, obviously, if you were a fan back then. I mean, you went to games and things. But when you stand next to this dude, even to this day, it's like, yo, you should not be.
All I'm going to say, and by no means am I a big man, but one of his legs is two of mine. Like, I'm only 5'7", 168. You know, I'm not a big human being at all. This guy is at the deep end of the gene pool. Deep end of the gene pool. Because I've stood next to him, and I'm going to tell you, I would never stand next to him for more than 5 minutes because I'd get a crick in my neck from looking up.
Right. You know, defenses now rotate, especially defensive linemen, they rotate those guys in and out so much. This is a guy who, you know, you need me to stay on the field on third downs?
Yeah.
I make it happen. You know, I might even bat a ball down for you. You know, what was he like, 6'4"?
6'5".
6'5"?
He was a legit 6'5". And it just, he was just a huge human being. His everything was huge on him. Just his girth, his legs, just everything. Just big everything. Just crazy. Shoes, well, he was like a size 16 shoe. It was just dumb.
Yeah.
Just like deep end of the gene pool. Way in the deep end. Like in the 12 foot.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking like 9 feet deep for the diving board. 12 foot all the way at the end there. Deep end of the gene pool. Him and Bruce, you know. And we know Bruce is going to be number one on this list.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way he's not going to be number one. The question we have for you on the table, who is number two? Number two defensive player of all time in Bills history. It's Bruce and everybody else. Who's next after Bruce? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Paul in a car, hang on. You're first after the break as we get your candidates for the number two player all time on defense in Bills history. Donald and I back in a second here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones here with you on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And we are knocking around what I think is an interesting debate topic here. Tonight is the debut of the top 10 defensive players of all time in Bills history. It's episode 3 of a 5-part series airing on MSG on Monday nights at 9 p.m. Tonight is the third installment of that series from Buffalo Bills Entertainment. And I think we all can safely assume that Bruce Smith is going to be number one on the list tonight. He's the only Bills Hall of Famer on the defensive side of the ball. And it just goes without saying. He's going to be number one. I don't think it's going to be any surprise to anybody. But who the heck's number two?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a good list of candidates that would qualify for that number two spot that people can make a case for. So we're asking you to make that case for us at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Bruce is number one, and then there's everybody else. Who is number two on your list for top defensive player of all time? It's Bruce number one. Who's your number two? 803-0550. We are going to go to the phones as promised, and we're going to lead off here with Ryan in Depew. Ryan, who you got as your number two, man? Number two defensive player of all time in Bills history.
Hey, Chris. It's Brian from Depew.
Oh, Brian. Okay, thank you.
Give you three guys real quick because I'm old school.
Yeah.
Bird, Tom Sestak, and Robert James. I never hear any of these guys ever talked about.
Yeah. I mean, I think what hurts Robert James is his career was shortened by injury. He is on the Wall of Fame, you know, and was productive when he did play for the Bills. He just had his career cut short by injury. And I think that's what hurts him, I think, in the eyes of a lot of people, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Butch Bird, I expect him to be on this list tonight for sure. I mean, he's the all-time interception leader with 42 in his career. And Sestak is a guy who I think still flies under the radar for a lot of people. For whatever reason, I'm not sure. He played seven seasons.
Now, Sestak was – what era was he?
He was the 60s. He was on the two-time AFL title teams. Played from 62 to 68, seven-year player, dominant – dominant defensive tackle, you know, four-time AFL All-Star. Mm-hmm. I believe he's also on the all-time AFL team, too. We had a texter that also texted in and actually nominated Sestak, too. Do you think he's good? I mean, who is – out of those three, though, Brian, who's your guy that you stick in the two-hole?
I'm going to go with Butch Bird because of the AFL championship game, multiple interception guy, kind of a shutdown cornerback in the 60s, didn't get a lot of respect from a lot of fans and a lot of critics here. That's my thought.
And didn't he have a return for a touchdown in one of those championship games? I think he had a return for a touchdown, too.
The crazy thing is you hear people make the argument that Cookie Gilchrist was better. You know, just a better player. Now, he had more interceptions, but Cookie was a better player. You know, you've heard people.
Right. Yeah. That, again, I think you get into the thing we were talking about with Bruce, just an extraordinary talent.
Mm-hmm.
Cookie Gilchrist was, obviously, on the offensive side of the ball as a running back, but he kicked off. Wait. And
the other cornerback that played.
Booker Egerson.
Booker Egerson. Sorry about that.
Booker had a longer career. He had a long career here and was very successful, and he's on the Wall of Fame. Look, I'm kind of venturing into an area that I didn't watch these guys play. I've seen highlights. I've interviewed old timers about these guys. But I think Butch Bird and Booker Egerson were extraordinary athletes. I think Booker would tell you he was faster than Butch. I don't know if Butch would agree.
Nobody's going to agree.
I've interviewed both those guys in my time. Covering this team, obviously as alumni, not as active players.
Right. You ask me if Usain Bolt is faster than me, I'm going to tell you no. But I'm not going to race him. But, no, he's not faster than me. What?
Yeah.
We just never get to prove that.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Who is your number two defensive player in Bills history? We all agree Bruce is number one. Who is your number two? We're going to go back to the phones. We go to Tom in Buffalo. So, Tom, who's your guy as the number two?
Hey, guys, I got to say Tom Sestak because my very first football game, I went to the Rock Pile with my dad and my buddy and his dad. And my buddy's dad knew Tom Sestak and some of the Bills players. And he took us right down on the field, which you could walk right out of the stands onto the field back in the day. Can you believe it? And I'm standing on the field looking around, and I'm like, wow, man, this is amazing. But Tom's wife actually cut my hair. She had a beauty salon down in her basement.
Wow.
And my buddy took me to their house one time, and she cut my hair.
Yeah, so and this is all great. These little anecdotes are fun to hear because the 1960s AFL was a whole lot different than what we see today. But what was it about Sestak's game, though, that makes him your number two?
That was a championship team. We actually won the AFL title.
Right, right.
We may have not won the Super Bowl, but that's our claim to fame. We did win a championship.
Yeah, but Sestak individually. Right. Help us out, Tom, because for guys that didn't see him play, tell us what stood out about Sestak's game for you.
He was just a great defensive player. I mean, if you throw me on the offensive side of the ball, I'm going to tell you Cookie Gilchrist.
Yeah.
Cookie was phenomenal. But Tom Sestak was the defense at the time.
Okay. Hey, I mean, I'll take your word for it. I mean, I know he was a dominant player, just from all the research I've had to do. I mean, from the time when they were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the AFL title teams. I do a lot of work on that, and so I kind of learned on the fly about a lot of these guys. But, you know, it's mostly from watching video clips, doing interviews, and researching these guys that I know this stuff. Here's the best case. If you're going to make Tom Sestak your number two all-time, you know, he's number two all-time Bills defensive players in team history. If he's your number two, this is your best argument. There are... In the 1960s, there were only six defensive linemen who were unanimous all-league three times or more. There's only six guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Bob Lilly, Merlin Olsen, Willie Davis, Gino Marchetti, and Deacon Jones. Tom Sestak is the sixth guy. He's the only one who is not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So during the 60s, six defensive linemen, unanimous all-league selections three times or more. Sestak is one of those six. The other five are in the Hall of Fame. He's not.
Now, has he been a finalist?
I really don't know. Here's the problem. A lot of the AFL players were overlooked for Pro Football Hall of Fame. Billy Shaw is a Bills player who is in the Hall of Fame. There are other guys, certainly, from the AFL days that have gone on to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But I think if you talk to some of the old-time AFL players, because I've heard this from interviewing them, they feel that a lot of guys did not get their due.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what hurts Sestak also is, again, it's a seven-year career. Now, should that be long enough to get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I think there are people that would argue that, yes, it is, especially if you sustained a level of excellence to the degree, that Sestak did. He was a four-time AFL All-Star. He's on the all-time AFL team. And you've got other guys with similar credentials here who are in the Hall of Fame. Now, was Tom Sestak as good as Merlin Olsen? I don't know. Olsen had a longer career. He also played with three other guys who mm-hmm. were ridiculously good on right. his defensive front, the fearsome foursome in the Rams days. One of them being Deacon Jones, who's also on this list as being three-time unanimous all-league selection. So, there are different arguments you can make here, but I think that's your best credential if you're pushing for Tom Sestak to be number two in Bills history for your defensive player list. Bruce is number one, and it's everybody else. We've got some early votes here for Tom Sestak, and I'm not surprised that we have. 803-0550, let's take another call. We're going to go to Steve in Amherst. We'll see who Steve has as his number two. Who you got for your number two, Steve?
It's a toss-up between Mike Stratton and Tom McDowell. At the time that the Bills had cut McDowell, he was their leader.
Ron McDowell, right?
Ron McDowell.
Yeah.
And then he went to Washington Redskins.
Right.
Until he was almost 40 and led them in sacks as well.
Yeah, he was an end. And yes, his career was.
Which we picked up on waivers from the Houston Oilers back then because mm-hmm. they didn't realize the helmet was too tight and he kept getting migraines. But Mike Stratton is the guy with the hit that was heard around the world.
Right.
Took Keith Lincoln right out of the championship game.
Yeah, I mean, I fully expect Stratton to be on the list tonight when the show airs on MSG at 9 p.m.
But not as high as number two.
Is he going to be number two? I don't know. I think there are credentials there where you can make an argument for Stratton. The guy came out of the University of Tennessee with certainly a lot of accolades. He was an AFL All-Star six straight years, 1963 to 1968. A lot of people say he's one of the best outside linebackers, not in the Hall of Fame. Does that mean he belongs in the Hall of Very Good? I don't know. This is a guy who... And he had a long career here. I mean, he played from 1962 to 1972. I mean, he spanned almost the entire history of the AFL. He came in a couple of years late and then, played a couple of years beyond the merger in 1970 and was a productive player by all the accounts that I've received for pretty much that entire span.
Mm-hmm.
Really good athletic player, productive, dependable. Played with a linebacking core that, was seen as one of the better groups in Bill's history because you had Harry Jacobs in the middle and then you had John Tracy on the other side, and that was the three guys that they played, when the defense carried them to two AFL titles. So I think there's certainly a case to be made for Mike Stratton. Number two, I don't know if I'm going on video clips and interviews with teammates.
Good to see.
I didn't get to see this guy play much aside from, the highlight reels, which are limited in scope in the 1960s. I mean, let's be honest. But I have heard people that would say definitely top five. Number two, maybe you can make a case for him. If you can make a better case than our previous caller, Stephen Amherst, did for Mike Stratton, you're welcome to do it at 803-0550. We're going to take one quick call here, one more quick one before the break. And we'll get to the other calls on the other side. But let's take Mike in North Tonawanda. Mike, you're on. What do you got for us as your number two?
Okay, guys. You know, I'm a little confused because we're doing I thought we did this top 10 defensive players the other day, and I got a little frustrated because while I was waiting on hold, the caller before me named all of the all the people I was thinking of.
Okay.
To get to the point, I was glad to hear Robert James mentioned because I watched him, and I watched him get hurt. Phenomenal corner. But how about Biscuit? Biscuit could do things that just nobody else in the league could do from that linebacker position. And I watched him return a blocked field goal for a 77-yard touchdown. I watched him in that Miami Dolphin game when he sacked Marino. He made him fumble, and he picked it up and scored from about the five. But Biscuit was just phenomenal, guys. What do you think?
I think it's a great choice, and certainly a worthy choice, a worthy candidate. I think here's the thing about Cornelius Bennett, just from a credential standpoint. Much like we said, you know, Tom Sestak is one of only six defensive linemen in the 1960s to be a unanimous all-league selection three times or more. The other five guys are in the Hall of Fame. That's your calling card for Tom Sestak. I think this is your calling card for Cornelius Bennett, AFC Defensive Player of the Year in 1988 and in 1991.
That means a lot.
Two times.
Yeah.
With Bruce Smith on your team.
Right.
Now, some people might hold that against him, though. They might say, well,
Bruce was beating up the...
You had Bruce on the other side. Of course you're going to rack up numbers and be ultra-productive. You had one of the best defensive players in the history of football on the field with you. Of course you're going to play. But I think the caller was right. He's a rare physical specimen, Cornelius Bennett. I mean, I remember him at Alabama. You want to talk about a guy tearing stuff up. I mean, holy cow. I remember watching him, and I didn't watch a ton of college football. I watched those games because he was on the field. Like, I would watch Alabama games when they were on TV because Bennett was on the field, because that guy terrorized offenses in the SEC. I mean, he was just ridiculous. And you know what? Cornelius Bennett, I think, has already been a number two, because wasn't he the second pick in the draft when he came out? I think he was the number two pick in the draft that year. And then he eventually comes to the Bills in that Halloween Day trade, the three-way trade, where the Bills gave up, they gave up a lot. I think it was two ones and a two, and maybe a third also.
But he lived up to it.
Well, I would say so. I mean, my goodness. Look, five Pro Bowls, two AFC Defensive Player of the Year nods, and 52 and a half sacks with the Bills, and he even was productive after he left the Bills. You know, played in Indy and Atlanta and did some things there. Was still a productive player.
Yeah.
Maybe not Pro Bowl caliber, but still a productive player that could help teams.
If you are, you know, AFC or just full league defensive player of the year, that means a lot. You know, that means you are voted as the number one guy on defense that year across the league or in the AFC. You know, so if he had it 2 years in a row, then, yeah, he needs to. He was dominant, though. The highlights that I get to see of him, the dude was dominant out there, regardless of the fact that he had Bruce on the other side. You know, if you had Bruce on the other side and you still didn't do anything, then you'd be talking bad about
it. I think this was the difference between Bruce's skill set and Biscuit's skill set. Bruce could bend that corner like nobody else. Violent player. Once he had you in his hands, you weren't getting anywhere. I think where Bennett's skill set was superior to Bruce's was just pure speed. Bennett was just so fast and so quick. That's how he made plays. He just got to the football so doggone fast because of his pure speed. He could change direction. I mean, this is a guy who could cover a tight end without a problem. You know, and you could line him up in a 3-4 just as an outside linebacker up on the line in pass rushing situations. But on passing downs, if you wanted him to play that 5 technique, he could play it. I mean, he was certainly strong enough to be up there. You could even put him in there on a rundown, and he was strong enough to set an edge, which is saying something about an outside linebacker in a 3-4. Now, back when he played, it was a little bit different than it is now. But still in all, we've got some good nominees thus far. There's a name that has not been mentioned yet that I think should be a consideration for number two all time. We'll see if some of our callers can get that name out there for us. We've got Dennis, we got Bob in Lockport, John on a cell. You guys hang on. We'll try to get to all three of you in the next segment. here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And we are talking about the newest episode set to debut tonight on MSG at 9 o'clock. It's the top 10 defensive players in Bills history. And I think everybody agrees across the board, Bruce is number one. Where the debate gets interesting is who do you have as your number two? And we've had some interesting submissions thus far for candidates that you folks feel are deserving for the number two spot. We've had Tom Sestak mentioned more than once. Robert James was mentioned, had a short injury-shortened career. Butch Byrd was mentioned, the team's all-time interception leader, 42 career interceptions. Mike Stratton was mentioned, and Cornelius Bennett is the latest name to come up. I want to hear more support. I want to hear why people feel that Bennett is deserving of that number
two.
You
also had one name that you said.
Yes, I might hold that for now because we got some calls that we have to get to here. We're going to lead off here with Dennis, who's been waiting on the line patiently. Dennis, who do you have as your number two defensive player of all time, Bills history?
Well, first of all, I wanted to tell you guys, great topic today. There are so many of them that deserve this, and I haven't heard a wrong answer yet. I'm going to give you two alternates on my main guy.
Yeah.
First of all, Spider-Man himself, Mr. Leadership, Daryl Taley.
Okay.
And also a very consistent, reliable safety in Henry Jones.
Henry Jones, interesting.
My alternate, and my top guy, I have to go back to the 60s, and we never would have won either of those two championships without the great free safety, George Sames.
Okay, George Sames, interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. I appreciate it, Dennis. Thank you very much for the call. I like it when the guys. Yeah, I mean, I like it when guys call in with a little bit of mix of old and new. So that was a good call from Dennis. We appreciate it. Go ahead.
I've heard people talk about Darryl and being kind of like the heartbeat of that defense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. He was the unquestioned leader, and Bruce Smith attributes him learning what it took to be a pro from Daryl Taley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody talks about, well, the light bulb went on for Bruce after his second year. It was largely because of Daryl Taley. He taught him how to be a professional, the commitment it was going to take if he wanted to be the best that he could be. And, you know, Daryl Taley in his own right, I think he's – now, granted, they didn't keep track of tackles back in the 60s. As a matter of fact, for most of the 80s, you know, early 80s, I don't think they still had tackles in an official statistic.
Mm-hmm.
But Taley, unofficially, is the all-time leading tackler in team history with 1,137 tackles. Two Pro Bowls to his credit, two-time All-Pro. And, yeah, I think the unquestioned spirit of that team as a whole, let alone the defense. We are up against the break. So, unfortunately, we got to get to our other calls in a little bit. But your number two nominees are welcome at 803-0550. Don't forget, though, coming up next hour is a guy who's probably going to be on this top 10 list tonight. Mount Washington. Big Ted is going to join us on the line on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Here's sports update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Sabres have hired a pair of assistant general managers. GM Jason Bottrell announced the hirings of Randy Sexton and Steve Greeley. Sexton, who spent the last 7 years in the Pittsburgh Penguins scouting department, will additionally serve as the GM of the Sabres AHL affiliate, the Rochester Americans. Greeley comes to the Sabres after two seasons as the assistant director of player personnel with the New York Rangers. Greeley spent seven seasons in the scouting department for the LA Kings as well, and served as a regional scout for the U.S. National Team Development Program from 2009 to 2012. Mark Jakubowski, who had served as the Sabres assistant GM since 2014, will now be the team's vice president of hockey administration. NFL news, the Kansas City Chiefs search for a new GM is now well underway. In the wake of a five-year contract extension for Chiefs head coach Andy Reid, GM John Dorsey was fired last Thursday. NFL.com's Ian Rappaport is reporting that co-director of player personnel for the Chiefs, Brett Veach, is rumored to be the, or is going to interview for the position. He was a rumored candidate for the Bills GM job just a couple of months ago. Tim Tebow took a small step closer to making it to the majors. The Mets announced on Sunday that they're promoting the former NFL quarterback from Class A Columbia to Class A Advanced St. Lucie. In the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers are reportedly discussing a three-team trade that involves them parting ways with forward Kevin Love and acquiring Indiana shooting guard Paul George. The third team the Cavs and Pacers are working with is the Denver Nuggets, who covet Love for their front court. The Nuggets are trying to put together a package of young players, which would go to the Pacers. And the Bisons open a series with Rochester at Coca-Cola Field tonight. It's a single admission doubleheader. First pitch is at 5:35 p.m. That's your sports update from One Bills Drive. And here on the John Murphy Show, we've been talking about the top 10 defensive players in Bills history, the program that airs tonight on MSG at 9 p.m. And we've been knocking around who the number two all-time defensive player might be, because I think everybody agrees that Bruce Smith is going to be number one. I think we'd all be shocked and fall out of our chair tonight if it's not him in the number one spot, since he's the only Pro Football Hall of Famer on the defensive side of the ball in team history, has his number retired, one of only two players to have that in team history. So I think by all accounts, most people are expecting him to be number one. We will revisit this conversation as to who your number two is at 803-0550. But joining us on the line right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is a player who is certainly, I would expect, to be on this list of top 10 defensive players in Bills history tonight. It's the man they called Mount Washington, Ted Washington, joining us on the line. And, Ted, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, Ted, now the Bills are doing this top 10 series, and everyone is debating if, you know, you're going to be on there or not. And Chris and I both believe, and even John, we all believe that you should be on this list. Do you pay attention to things like this?
No, I don't get caught up in that. But it'd be nice to be recognized as one of the top 10 guys there. My last and ultimate goal for the NFL is just try to get that gold jacket.
Yeah. Ted, it's interesting because obviously when you came here, you know, in 95, a lot of us, you know, had to quickly get on the uptake with where your career had been prior to that. Obviously, you were in Denver, and you were a former first-round pick. But it didn't seem like your career really took off until you got here to Buffalo. Can you just maybe shed some light on maybe how the first part of your career went before you got to Buffalo and what kept you from kind of hitting your stride like you did when you got to the Bills?
Well, I was drafted by the 49ers in 91. And, you know, you listen to the veteran guys, rookies, first rounder coming in there. And, you know, they feed you a lot of stuff to make you comfortable, which was sabotaging the rookie guys so they won't take their position.
Uh-huh.
And so you go through the motions for the first year or so because you know they're not going to get rid of you. And then my third year came around and I broke my leg in that NFC Championship game and realized that now, you know, I'm on a bubble. At the time, I was on the operating table, and I found out I was traded to Denver for that last year of my contract. And after that, I became a free agent. And I think that was my wake-up call and realized that it's a business. And if you want to stay in the league, you're going to have to do what you have to do and can't rely on other people and what they're saying for you. So when I got to Buffalo, I had to make a name for myself, and the rest is history.
How hard was it for you to make a name for yourself in Buffalo and you had so many other guys on the team that had already made names for themselves?
Well, I was more of a in the pissed off mode because being traded, and just felt that, you know, I didn't live up to what they wanted, and then I had to prove to them that they should have kept me and so on and so forth. So coming to Buffalo, realizing who I was on the team with, and going into that field house at the time, the old field house, and seeing the pictures on the wall of all the players, Pro Bowlers, Bruce, Thurman, Jim, Andre, and all those guys. And, you know, you say, hey, I want my picture up there one day, and that made it happen.
So as you came to the Bills in 95, you know, obviously you didn't have a say in that. you know, in the way it happened. But did you feel like you were tailor-made for the role you were walking into? Because, I mean, you think of that 3-4 and, you know, what football was like in the 90s. I mean, I don't know if they could have found a better fit. Did you feel the same way?
I felt the same way because of Wade Phillips, because Wade and I were at Denver together.
Right.
And I, you know, when I came into the league, I was more of a 3 technique or 5 technique, you know, defensive end or tackle. Wade switched me to playing the nose guard position. Well, before Wade, the Niners were trying to switch their defense, cater it to a 3-4, but it was a 5-man front. And Wade, you know, told me about the 3-4, and I got comfortable with it. And when he left, I was like, well, I need to find a team that's with a 3-4 because I've learned a new style of defense, and that's what I like to play from here on out. And Buffalo was that choice.
Now, when Wade said he felt like you should switch to nose, was that something that you just embraced right off the bat, or you were like, I don't know about that?
I had no choice. I mean, I was traded, and if I want to get picked up or a new contract, you're going to play the position.
Yeah.
Right. Now, obviously, playing 5 technique is certainly different than playing the nose. I mean,
yeah.
Did you try or say to yourself, I got to change my body composition a little bit, or did you pretty much stay where you were, like just in terms of weight-wise and training?
Well, with the Niners, when I came in, I was under 300 pounds when I came in the league. You had to play all positions. So you had to play the shade, the 3, the 5, and some defenses, they had you out wider than that. So you had to play all those positions.
Yeah.
And but with the Niners, you know, it was primarily you had to play it all. And I was backing up Michael Carter, who was pretty much a nose tackle. But that style of defense, like, it was a 5-man front. And he was going to be shade or hit up. So I had to adjust then. But when I got to Denver, it was more, I like to run this 3-4 type. This is where I want you. And that's where I played.
Now, when you got to Buffalo, you feel like you benefited from, you know, being on the field with so many different guys like Bruce and the rest of those guys that had the name. So defenses were going to focus on them. When you got here, I mean, this is where you first really got going as a defensive tackle. Do you feel like you benefited from having those guys on the field with you?
I benefit from it, but my thing was more how they played. Bruce already made his name. And those were playmakers. Mm-hmm. Linebackers with Cornelius Bennett, all those guys, they were playmakers. I wanted to be a playmaker. I didn't want their names to just get in the paper and not me. And I'm not just going to sit and take a block and watch them get all the glory. So I had to step it up another notch. Not only take on the blocks, but make plays. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what I did.
Right, because, I mean, a lot of – it's kind of the dirty work position. I mean, because in that defense, your most nose tackles are asked to just, you know, 2-gap, tie up 2 guys, let the linebackers run and hit and get all the tackles. You know, but you look back at just some of your numbers. I mean, you had 130 tackles in 1996, and then you had 124 the next year in 97.
Well, that was not a cut off, but that was the goal, is to at least get 100 tackles. I want to be just like linebackers. If they're going to make 100 tackles in the season, I want to do the same thing. And so that means you have to pick up that pace to keep up with them or beat them to the ball. And pretty much that's what I did.
So on a roster that had guys who had been to the Pro Bowl, you know, like Bruce, like Cornelius that first year you were here, and then even Bryce Popp, who comes in here and becomes Defensive Player of the Year, you know, to get the Pro Bowl recognition finally, you know, a couple of years after you had gotten here, what kind of satisfaction did that bring you to get that recognition from your peers, despite the fact that there was some well-recognized Pro Bowl talent already on this roster?
Well, the difference was it was our whole defensive front, pretty much.
Right.
That was Pro Bowlers. And you don't see that often when you have at least 3 of your 4 or 5 front guys in the Pro Bowl. And, I mean, I don't think I've seen that. I've seen a couple of guys, but you had Bryce Popper, who was a stand-up outside. He could have been defensive end. Bruce, myself, and Phil Hansen should have been a Pro Bowler. I mean, that whole defensive front, you know, could have been pro bowlers.
Yeah.
And that's the satisfaction I got out of it, all of us. It's just instead of recognizing one, they saw all of us bringing the phone.
So, Ted, when you think about, and granted, you've got a small window of time in terms of Bills history. I mean, we're talking about a 58-year history of the franchise. You know, you were on board here for, you know, eight of those years. But based on, you know, the time you spent here, the guys you played with, you know, who do you think would qualify for a top 10 list of Bills' all-time defensive players? I think Bruce goes without saying, but maybe in terms of the guys you played with, who do you think merits consideration for a list like this?
Wow. Defensively?
Yeah.
You said defensive linemen or just defensive
just
players?
Defensive players. I mean.
Ooh, man. Well, see, the only guys I played with that was there was Bruce, Phil Hansen, Bryce Pop, Cornelius.
Tally?
No, I didn't play with Tally.
No, okay. Tally was gone, yeah.
Henry Jones, Thomas Smith. But and those all, you know, those all the select guys that I was there with
right.
for those years. So it, my list is real short. So
yeah,
before that, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I mean we've all had our own opinions of, you know, watching Bruce work over there, and you've kind of had a different kind of view of it being right next to him on the field. You know, everybody talks about how he could just do certain things physically that most defensive ends couldn't do. I remember Marcellus Wiley, you know, telling me after a year and a half of watching Bruce on film, he's just come to the conclusion that he just can't bend the corner the same way. His body won't do that. Are there things that you still think of regarding Bruce's game that you just kind of marvel at a little bit, just from a physical ability standpoint?
No, not really. And he probably hate me when I say this because I always told him that he liked to freelance, but Bruce already made his name of who he is. But when I played with him, I'm like, no, I'm not going to run a stunt with you on first and 10. We need to stop this run first. I don't want to run a twist to where you can go and get the sack and it's a run. I said, no, I'm not doing that. So after that, you gotta hate me for that one, though.
See, I think Bruce, I think you're probably the only guy that could tell Bruce no and not have to worry about repercussions.
Oh, yeah, he know it. I told him. And I'm probably the only one that really teased him a lot. Canadians can vouch for that. And, you know, Bruce was Bruce. I'm not gonna be scared of who you are and what you've done. You know, you're my teammate. Let's get it going together.
Right. They're like, you ain't getting all this shine. We ain't doing that. We're going to do this. This is what we doing.
That's it.
So in your time here in Buffalo, Ted, is there – I don't know what sits at the top of the list for you. I mean, maybe it's in 98 starting 0-3 and making the playoffs. Maybe it's 99 finishing with the number one defense in the league. But what part of your time in Buffalo do you hang your hat on, you know, as something you're most proud of in your time as a Bill?
Well, I would say it was more off the field stuff. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot to be done, needed to be done during that time I was there. And I did accomplish a lot with the community, not only in Orchard Park, but in Buffalo and all the surrounding areas, giving back just to see the expression. I know you got the number one fans, but to see the expression on kids' face that didn't have, and I was able to give and participate. I didn't just, you know, give out money and not be there. I was always there to see it. And I think that's the most, you know, I got out of that, you know, really made myself, my family, just proud of myself, you know, just giving back to the community.
See, as big as intimidating as Ted was, he's a big teddy bear.
He's a
you
big teddy bear, yeah, definitely.
Well, I'll let you slide with that because I was. But when it's time to play, I took care of business. So when it was time to step back, I was a gentle giant.
A gentle giant. Yeah. Now, you also had some businesses out here, correct?
Not in Buffalo, no.
Not in Buffalo? Okay. Okay.
No.
Now, I've had somebody tweet me and say, are you still making delicious wine?
No, that's Ruben.
See, and Ruben and Ted, you know, they were pretty tight when they were here together as teammates. And you know, of course, they went at it in practice also at times. I know that the guys that put the program together for the top 10 defensive players of all time in Bills history, they talked to Ruben an awful lot about you, Ted. So do we need to be a little concerned about some of Ruben's stories on you or no?
Ruben can't say nothing bad about me because we had fun. We did a lot of things together. We had fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, he coming in as a rookie, and I had a few years on him. We gelled, and it's rare to see guys on the opposite side of the ball gel together like that. And we're best friends, and we had fun.
Yeah.
Now, we did the offensive, top offensive players. That was last week?
Yeah.
And Ruben didn't make the list. Ted, so
wow.
What do you? Here we go. So, what do you think about that?
Well, I personally, I wish you would have called me because you got a guy making the nine, 12 Pro Bowls.
Yeah,
yeah.
He didn't get there just being Ruben Brown. He earned that.
Yeah.
You know, coming in as a rookie,
right.
and then putting a stamp on his name, he did a hell of a job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. Listen, Ted, we thank you very much for joining us here today. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, and you're a lot less intimidating when you're talking on the phone than when I'm standing next to you in the locker room. So,
20 years ago, man.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it doesn't change the fact that I practically got a crick in my neck looking up at you while I was trying to interview and you reach your mouth with my microphone.
Wow.
But thanks very much. Thanks very much, Ted. I appreciate it, and it's good to talk to you and hear that you're doing well.
Anytime, guys.
All right, that's Ted Washington, otherwise known as Mount Washington. And, boy, he's a lot easier to talk to on the telephone, I got to say. You're in the locker room as a young reporter, and you're my size.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I mean, Ted, you got a couple of minutes for a couple of, and he would play off of his size. He knew how intimidating he was. So you'd go up to him and you'd say, hey, you know, Ted, you got a few minutes for a couple of questions? No.
Yeah.
Just a big booming no, and you're just like,
all right.
Backing up real fast, but then, like, if he knew you and you were a guy that that was there regularly, you know, eventually, be like, hey, I'm just kidding. I got a couple minutes, you know, whatever.
Now, you just listen to him. You know, he sounds like a guy who's a straight shooter.
Yeah.
You know, like, no.
He got on the field though, and he was all business. It was all about doing the job. You know, and this is a guy that went on even after his time here in Buffalo and played till he was 39 years old. I mean, this guy played till he was 39. Got his Super Bowl ring finally with New England in the early 2000s. There
came in 91 and
so
left out in Cleveland in 2007.
Yeah, so he put a nice bow on his career. You know, got his Super Bowl ring. You know, I wish he got it somewhere else, not in New England, but still, in all, I mean, just a fantastic career by him, and really kind of an underrated career when you think about it. It got off to a slow start, which I think hurt him, but then he got here and his career took off. 3 Pro Bowls here in a Bills uniform. And I think a worthy candidate on this list. You think when you think about would he be number 2? I don't know. Did he play here long enough? 95 to 2000. He didn't miss a game in the 6 years that he played here. I mean, a man that big never missing a game.
Right. And not,
you know, with the grind on those joints every play. He was a unique specimen
in that game. And those days were.
And those stats.
Right. Like, I mean, he has to be in consideration, at least top 5.
I will say this. The reason I would rank him high, I would probably have him in my top 5. And the reason why is because he dominated games. Mm-hmm. And to dominate games from the nose tackle position, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do. And you can make the argument again. Had Bruce on one side. Had Phil Hansen on the other. You know, had Bennett for a year with him, had, you know, Sam Coward behind him. He dominated games. Could not single him up. He would eat your team alive if you didn't double team him on every single play. He was that strong a human being.
He said it. I mean, he said, look, those guys were the playmakers. And that's how it is in football. The defensive ends, outside linebackers, period, and everybody else behind, those are the playmakers. The guys who play defensive tackle, and especially in the 3-4, a nose tackle, you're supposed to do all the dirty work and just eat up double teams, be a run stuffer, you know, where people can't move you. And they couldn't move him, but he didn't want to just be that. You know, when he got here, he knew he had all those guys around him, And he was like, I'm going to make plays. And I'm going to make sure that I make plays.
Yeah.
So my name is in the newspaper like everybody else's.
Yeah. We've had some callers who've been holding. They waited through Ted's interview, which was great. But let's get back to the phones here as we're asking you, who is your number two on the all-time list of top 10 defensive players in Bills history? We've had some great nominees thus far. We're going to go to Bob in Lockport, who's got his nominee. Bob, who do you have for us?
I wanted Tom Sestak. I know someone called in.
Right.
I remember playing. I watched the Bills in 62, and Tom Sestak dominated the league. He's by far was the best defensive lineman has ever played. Then I came up with George Saints, and the last caller picked him. But I'll throw another name in, Aaron Williams. He was a great safety, and the defense had a lot of problems after he got hurt because the communications was terrible. He got everybody lined up in the right spot. So he might not be number two, but he was a very good
That's a shock.
Player for us.
Yeah, Bob, what was it about Saints that makes you feel he was worthy? You're a guy that saw him play, so that's why I'm asking.
Hard hitter.
Yeah.
Hard hitter, and he stuck his nose in there. I mean, how big the play was, he was always there. He's just a great player. They had so many good players.
Yeah, they did.
Jim Dunaway, Stratton. Tom Sestak was by far one of the best, but and people don't realize that he didn't play that position in college. He was a tight end.
Yeah, came
in college.
A tight end. Yep, came to the pros as a tight end.
His career got caught short because of injuries.
Right. Well, all right, Bob, we thank you for that and a little bit of the history lesson there. Anytime I can get a fan that saw players play in the 60s and can lend the insight, I want it because I don't have that.
All we get to see is highlights, and the highlights are limited.
So that's the second guy that's mentioned, George Saints, the safety, who was also a running back / fullback in his college days at Michigan State. He was a two-way player, played safety here for the Bills. Five-time AFL All-Star. He was also on the AFL all-time team. So I think he certainly will be on the list tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Will he be number two? I don't know. I don't know if that's enough to get you there with some of these other candidates that we've mentioned. Certainly a great player. And I will say this, in the interviews that I've done over the years with some of his teammates, the number one thing that I kept hearing over and over and over and over, fantastic tackler. Like, they said he was the best tackler on their team.
Yeah.
I said, really? Why? They said he played for us for whatever it was, 7, 8, 9 years. There were some guys that played with him for that entire span of time. They said, I think I saw him miss one tackle in his career.
I'm
like, wow, okay.
It's hard from I feel like to be top two or, on this list, you have to actually not just be like a good player, but you have to be able to dominate games on a consistent basis for a couple of years to be on this list. And it's hard from the safety position to just take over games because different things have to go your way.
Right.
Now you can come down and help out in the run game and things like that, but it's pretty hard to take over a game from the safety position. Defensive ends, outside linebackers, they can take over a game.
Yeah. You got to be like Ed Reed.
Right, exactly.
If you're going to be a safety that takes over the game. That's the only way you're going to do that. And it is hard. And back then, the ball was flying around a good deal, in the AFL anyway. Games were largely run-based still. I mean, the AFL was airing it out more than the NFL, certainly, at that time. That's what made them so attractive to fans. But Saints is I'm not surprised Saints is getting a little bit of traction here. There is still a name that has not been mentioned, and I'm going to mention it next segment. But John Onicell, Ed Onicell, and Tony in Arkansas. Hang on. We'll get to you guys on the other side for your candidates for the number two defensive player in Bills history. Everybody agrees Bruce is number one. Who do you got in the two hole? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown with Donald Jones. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you here on the John Murphy Show as we are talking about the top 10 defensive players in Bills history. It's the program airing tonight on MSG at 9 p.m. It's episode 3 of a 5-part television series by Buffalo Bills Entertainment. It began with the top 10 moments in team history, followed with the top 10 offensive players in team history, and then tonight at 9, we're going to have the top 10 defensive players in team history. And playing off of that a little bit, we had Ted Washington on in the last segment, the former defensive tackle for the Bills, three-time Pro Bowler in his 6 seasons with Buffalo. And he kind of named a couple of guys that he played with who he thought would merit consideration. Obviously, Bruce was one of them, and we all expect him to be number one on the list. Mm-hmm. What we've been asking callers and Bills fans out there is, who is your number two? Who is your number two guy for defensive players of all time? We've had some great nominees. There is one name that hasn't been mentioned, and I'm curious to see if one of our callers currently waiting on hold has this guy. If they do not, I will mention him before the break, I promise, okay? Mm-hmm. We've been waiting on that one for a little bit, but I'm surprised he hasn't been mentioned yet. So we go to the phones, and as promised, we start with John on a cell who's been waiting patiently. John, who's your number two defensive player in Bills history?
How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Listen, I've been going back and forth on this, and Teddy would be a great choice, but I got to go with the biscuit. Khalil is better, and I'll tell you why. I think it was 89. Bruce Smith got hurt. He missed like 6 to 8 games. And Walt Corey implemented a defense called the Sikkim defense when he had Cornelius Bennett all over the place. He kept that defense together. In the Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl we played against Dallas, he put Cornelius Bennett in the middle. He was all over the place. He was watching Emmitt Smith. Emmitt Smith had something like 13, 14 yards. And then in the second half, he switched up the defense to put him back on the outside. Why would he do that? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
One name I would like to mention, though, that I think he should be considered is Fred Smirlis.
There it is. Thank you, John.
Oh, you're welcome. No, Fred Smirlis, I love him. He was a bear. I mean, he played nose tackle. I mean, he was just a bear.
He looked like a bear. with the mustache and the big, big head of hair, he looked like a bear.
Yeah. Smirlis. I mean, I loved him. I mean, he was... He's what you could say, a true Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
Bear. Well, I hang up and listen to your comments on what I just said, because Cornelius Bennett, I mean, he was all over the place in that Super Bowl until he was the outside.
All right, John, good call, and we thank you for it, and we thank you for waiting also. Fred Smirlis. Now, you look at Fred, and, he was probably the, beginning of – that modern-day defensive tackle who was not only strong and powerful but athletic. He could run. Back then, defensive tackles were only about 270, 280. But, he could move. He had lateral movement. Super strong guy. But, a guy that could – good straight-line speed once he beat somebody. Good technique player. But I think he was kind of the dawn of thinking, defensive tackles can actually be pretty athletic in the defense.
He might be one of the most forgotten players, and it has a lot to do with the era that he played in.
It was kind of made evident here. First hour and a half of the show, no mention of Fred Smirlis. Heard Henry Jones before Fred Smirlis. Yeah. No offense to Henry. Great player, nice safety. He didn't go to 5 Pro Bowls.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And we had Fred on the show.
Yeah.
And trust me, he let us know about it. And I asked him the question, who do you think should be number two? Of course, he said himself first.
The best promoter of Fred Smirlis was Fred Smirlis. And it was never, there were never two ways about it. he might be number two on this list, but he was his own number one promoter.
Number one, right. Exactly. He'd tell you himself and then sell you on believing that he's probably better than Bruce.
Yeah. Well, he would try. Exactly. I don't think he's going to turn any believers out of that, but no, but Fred had a pretty accomplished career here, and it's the shame of it is he didn't get to enjoy the success the team had to any when they reached critical mass, because 88, he blocks that kick, they win the division, the goalposts come down against the Jets in 88, and then he plays here in 89, and then he's gone.
Yeah,
He gets clipped, and the Bills turn the page and move in a different direction, and
he talked about it.
Just a tough way to end,
and
miss out
the Super Bowls.
That's got to be tough, especially after you give so many years to one organization, and then to see them have the success you were waiting on for so long. That's got to be a tough pill to swallow. But 5-time Pro Bowler, All Pro in 1982, you know, had that clutch play with the block kick in 88. I mean, I think you can give strong consideration to Fred as the number two defensive player of all time. 803-0550, if you feel differently. It looks like Cornelius Bennett has probably got the most momentum, I would say, at this point in time, with a close second being Tom Sestak right now. And how interesting is it that there are so many front seven players that are being mentioned as potential number twos?
Yeah, not
a lot of guys in the secondary, aside from George Sames. Butch Bird was mentioned earlier. Robert James very early. But not a ton of DBs.
Not a ton of DBs, but it's just, you know, like the defensive front, the defensive ends and linebackers and nose tackles, those guys are the ones that can truly disrupt games like every play if they want to.
Right.
And they have the energy to do it. You can truly disrupt a play every play, you know. And the cornerbacks and safeties aren't the same way because they have to actually throw it your way.
Right.
You know, like a lot of things have to go your way for you to be able to make things happen.
803-0550, give us your number two defensive player in Bills history. We all agree Bruce is number one. Who is your number two? We go to Ed on a cell who's waited a while also. Ed, thanks for joining us and waiting. What do you got for us?
Good afternoon, guys. I had my choice stolen, but I have to say that it necessitates an asterisk because I've been watching the Bills going back to when the Jets were the Titans. And the guy that's not even mentioned is the Dancing Bear, and that's Ron McDowell.
Yeah.
The Bills cut him, and George Allen picked him up, and he played for the Redskins for a number of years after that.
We had a caller earlier who said he played till he was almost 40 down there. And, yeah, I mean, it's like the one that got away kind of thing. You know, you get the big.
Yeah, the guy back when linemen were considered fat at 275 pounds, this guy played over 300 pounds.
He played that big?
Yeah, he was over 300 pounds. And that was every year. That's why they called him the Dancing Bear.
Yeah.
And you can ask his best friend, the punter, from back there in those days.
Yeah. Well, you're not the first guy to say Ron McDowell, and we thank you for it. I just don't know if he spent enough time in a Bills uniform to merit more consideration. I think a lot of these guys that are calling and mentioning him just think of his overall skill set and the amount of time he's played in the league and the success he had therein, where top 10 defensive players of all time in Bills history. Maybe you got to have guys a little more time in the red, white, and blue.
Yeah, guys that have been here for some time and put in a lot of work here, along with other organizations, but put in a lot of work here in Buffalo would probably have stronger consideration for number two.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Tell us who your number two all-time defensive player in Bills history is. Bruce is number one. Who is your number two? We go to Tony in Arkansas to get his number two candidate. Who do you have, Tony?
Chris and DJ, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I was confused. The number two, I'm not 100% sure. I thought you were talking about the best defensive players, and I never hear the guy's name mentioned. Number 46, Leonard Smith.
Mm.
Ronnie Lott, one of the hardest hitting guys. He'd knock your helmet right off your head. And I'll take your comments off the air. And thanks, Scott, for everything you guys do. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks for the call, Tony. You know, Leonard Smith is an interesting candidate. I don't think he's number two, the number two defensive player in Bills history. You know, a career that unfortunately got cut short by some knee problems that stemmed from an infection, if I remember right. And, a lights out hitter. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. The guy brought the wood. I mean, you want to talk about an intimidating presence over the middle. I mean, this guy was a knockout hitter. He wasn't, this guy wasn't wrapping you up all that often. He was just lowering the shoulder and lowering the boom. And if he connected, he would knock you into next week.
You look at a defense today, right? And this is what I talk about in the safety position. You look at a defense today that has been one of the better defenses in the league for the last, 6 years. Seattle's defense, right? And Cam Chancellor back there a safety who will knock your head off if he gets the chance.
Yeah.
Big, physical, strong safety. And if you said, who's the guy that actually disrupts plays on a regular basis, I would almost guarantee you it's going to be one of the guys on the front seven. You know, one of the guys on the defensive line or linebackers, just because those guys are the ones that you don't have to have so many different things happen for you to make plays.
Mm-hmm.
At the safety position, now, you know when Cam Chancellor is around, you know, all right, if I catch the ball, I got to get down. Or a running back, they know where he is, but he can't make those game-changing plays every play like everybody else can. So that's why on a Bills top 10 in history, you're probably going to have guys that were on the front seven, you know, in the probably the top three, top four.
Yeah. 803-0550, there's a line open for you to jump on board. Tell us who is your number two Bills defensive player of all time. Everybody agrees, dollars to donuts, it's Bruce Smith who's number one. But who is your number two? We've had a lot of interesting nominees thus far. Cornelius Bennett, Tom Sestak, getting the most votes so far. If you feel someone's been overlooked, like a Fred Smirlis perhaps, get on the line and let us know. Brian and Amherst, you're going to lead us off in the next segment. Jeff in Jamestown, you're on deck. We'll get to you guys on the other side. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones with you here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. As we bandy about a topic that I knew was going to be up for debate today. I knew people were going to have a whole host of opinions on this one. Top 10 defensive players in Bills history airing tonight on MSG at 9 p.m. It's episode 3 of a 5-part television series put together by Buffalo Bills Entertainment. And it'll be on MSG tonight at 9, as I said. And I think we all fully anticipate that Bruce Smith's going to be number one on this list. It's a no-brainer. But after that, I think you got a wide-open race here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had some people call in, and to this point, Cornelius Bennett and Fred Smirlis, well, Cornelius Bennett and Tom Sestak have been the most popular nominees named by our callers. Fred Smirlis just popped up in the last segment, which shocked me. I didn't think it was going to take that long for a 5-time Pro Bowler who was as dominant as he was to get mentioned, but he finally got mentioned. We've also had names like Butch Byrd, Darrell Talley, George Sames, Ted Washington, Leonard Smith was just mentioned, Mike Stratton, Ron McDowell, who didn't spend a lot of time in a Bills uniform but was nominated more than once. So we've had an interesting cross-section of defensive Bills history coming at us here on the show. It's been fun to listen to, too, especially fans that have seen these players from the 60s, like George Sames or Tom Sestak, to kind of shed some light on the kind of players that they were. As promised, you're going to lead off with Brian and Amherst here. So, Brian, who do you have as your number two?
I have to agree with you, Chris. The number two has got to be Ted Washington. I mean, back in the middle 90s, especially like 96 and 97 when he first came onto the Buffalo Bills, I don't think I've ever seen an interior player as dominant as him, you know, and you're right. Like, I mean, that was incredible. They would double and triple team this guy every time. And for 130 tackles, you know, for an interior nose play, it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, and he was good for somewhere between 3.5 to 6 sacks a season, too. I mean, it's not like he was just making tackles on running backs and stuff. He'd get in the backfield and get after a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he would just ragdoll people, you know, and I was so pissed when Greg Williams basically, you know, the Bills, the last time I remember, I was just livid with the Music City Miracle. But that team, you know, that was the last team the Bills should have been in the Super Bowl because they had the Titans beat. And all they had to do was tackle the damn guy, you know, for and end the game. But with him and Pat Williams, you're right. They were just, it was almost unfair for another team to try to run on the Bills back then.
Yeah.
Those two guys were on the field.
Yeah, no question. And thanks for the call, Brian. We appreciate it. Yeah, I think, and I haven't really definitively declared it, but I think Ted Washington's my number two. I mean,
I think for me, it would have to be either Ted or between Ted, Fred Smirlis, or Cornelius.
Yeah. Bennett's a freak.
Yeah.
he's a physical freak. But, you know, those guys are the guys that always get all the eye-popping attention because they can just do unique things on the field. Ted did unique things in a different way. He just did it because he was so dang big and so dang strong. Mm-hmm. But for a guy that was that large to have the feat that he did, I mean, for the MSG viewers that are watching the show there, they're watching some Ted Washington highlights right now. He knifes into the backfield, and he grabs Drew Bledsoe, who is a 6'5", 245-pound mm-hmm. quarterback, and throws him to the side like a sack of potatoes. I mean, it's just his brute strength was just – it was rare, uncanny, and I wish I had all of the defensive stats top to bottom for the 1999 Bills in front of me right now. I'm going to try to look them up when they finished number one in the league in total defense. I'm trying to remember where they were in some of the other statistical categories, so I'm going to try to look that up during the break to share some of those, because obviously Ted was a big part of that, you know, along with Bruce and Phil Hansen. It was a great front. It really was. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to Jeff in Jamestown, who has another nominee for the number two hole. What do you got?
Yeah, I was at that 88 game when Fred Smirlis blocked that kick, and that was amazing because I went on the field, and that was only the second time the fans were on the field since we beat the Dolphins in 80. And I can remember high-fiving Fred, believe it or not, and hugging Ted Cottrell. That was amazing. But my player of number two, who I think is the most underrated Bill of all time, is Phil Hansen. I mean, I remember him coming in for Bruce when he was suspended, played right defensive end, and I believe he made a really great tackle in that comeback victory on Hayward Jeffries. If he doesn't make that tackle, it's a first down, and we may not win that game.
Yeah, I think And thanks, Jeff, for the call. I think Phil is underrated. I don't think he's number two on my all-time list. I would certainly give him consideration for the top 10 list. I mean, he is on the Wall of Fame, played here 10, 11 years, 91 to 2001, yeah, 11 years. And, you know, had to play in the shadow of guys like Bruce Smith and Ted Washington and Cornelius Bennett and Daryl Talley, but did it with a lunch pail mentality. And you want to talk about a dependable player. I mean, you knew every week what you were going to get out of Phil Hansen. Kyle Williams' approach to football, you know, for people that know the modern players, Kyle Williams' approach to football is almost identical to the way Phil approached
the
game.
Okay.
Phil was the same type of guy. Had a passion for playing the game, was a pro's pro, always did it the right way, always gave you everything he had, played hurt, never made excuses. Ultra competitive. I mean, he very quietly had a 10 sack season. You know, the same year Bruce had a double digit sack season and Bryce Popp had double digit sacks. I think it was 96 or 97 that he had double digit sack season. It was the only time he hit 10 sacks, but he was always good for 6 to 8 every year. And you want to talk about setting that edge, that classic left defensive end, you know, playing, you know, wrestling with that tight end and that offensive tackle over there. I mean, he could do it. 6'5", long arms. Just looked like that quintessential Midwest country guy.
Right.
Just, you know, somebody that could bale hay for 12 hours and not even think about it. He looked like that guy.
All right. So on the other side of the break, I have a question for you that might throw you for a loop a little bit.
All right. We'll try to be as ready for it as we can. I'm also going to look up those 99 stats, but keep the calls coming. We want the number two nominees from you, top 10 defensive players of all time. Who's your number two, knowing Bruce is number one? 803-0550. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Sabres have hired a pair of assistant general managers. GM Jason Botterill announced the hirings of Randy Sexton and Steve Greeley. Sexton, who spent the last 7 years in the Pittsburgh Penguins scouting department, will additionally serve as the GM of the Sabres' AHL affiliate, the Rochester Americans. Greeley comes to the Sabres after two seasons as the assistant director of player personnel with the Rangers. He also spent 7 seasons in the scouting department for the LA Kings and served as a regional scout for the U.S. National Team Development Program from 2009 to 2012. Mark Jakubowski, who has served as the Sabres' assistant GM since 2014, will become the team's vice president of hockey administration. NFL news, the Kansas City Chiefs' search for a new GM is well underway in the wake of a 5-year contract extension for Chiefs head coach Andy Reid. GM John Dorsey was fired last week. NFL.com's Ian Rappaport is reporting that co-director of player personnel for the Chiefs, Brett Veach, a rumored candidate for the Bills GM job just a couple of months ago, will formally interview for the position. Tim Tebow took a small step closer to making it to the majors. The Mets announced on Sunday that they're promoting the former NFL quarterback from Class A Columbia to Class A Advanced St. Lucie. NBA news, the Cleveland Cavaliers are reportedly discussing a 3-team trade that involves them parting ways with forward Kevin Love and acquiring Indiana shooting guard Paul George. The third team the Cavs and Pacers are working with is the Denver Nuggets, who covet Love for their front court. The Nuggets are trying to put together a package of young players, which would go to the Pacers. And the Bisons open a series with Rochester at Coca-Cola Field tonight. It's a single admission doubleheader. First pitch is at 5:35. That's your sports update here from One Bills Drive. As we are talking, debating the number two defensive player in Bills history. And as we suspected, this was going to stir up a lot of debate among Bills fans. Everybody has their favorites. I think everybody universally accepts Bruce as the number one defensive player in team history. And tonight, when the third installment of the Bills Top 10 television series debuts on MSG at 9 p.m., the top 10 defensive players of all time, everybody expects Bruce to be sitting there in the number one spot. There's going to be a riot somewhere if he's not. Maybe right in Virginia. Down there.
Right, but, in his house.
But beyond Bruce, the question is, who is number two? And I think there are some really good candidates that might be ever so slightly above the rest of the guys that we would consider top 10 all-time defensive players in Bills history. You know, Cornelius Bennett has been getting a lot of consistent support, I guess you would say, from the start of the show. Tom Sestak is, you know, an AFL guy who's been getting consistent push from several of the callers. After that, it's been kind of wide open, though. Ted Washington, Fred Smirlis, Butch Bird, Daryl Talley, Mike Stratton, George Sames. Those are some of the other names that have been thrown in the mix, along with Ron McDowell. Mm-hmm. It's another guy who certainly was a talented player. Didn't get a whole lot of time here before he was picked up by Washington after he was released here.
You just got to show – you got to respect a guy like Ted Washington or Fred Smirlis, who played actually defensive tackle,
yeah.
You know, and actually take over games from the defensive tackle position. It's not easy to do, you know. When you have a guy like Ted Washington who has over 100 tackles in multiple seasons from the defensive tackle position, like that is – that is not easy to do.
And think about this, just based on the conversation we've had with the callers thus far – we're talking about who's in that number two hole. Fred Smirlis has been mentioned. Tom Sestak's been mentioned. And Ted Washington's been mentioned. They're all defensive tackles,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, not something that you would always hear or expect to hear maybe on the defensive side of the ball. I think you'd certainly expect to hear, you know, a defense, if there's a prominent defensive end who sacked the quarterback a lot, like Bruce,
right.
You'd certainly expect to see them there. Maybe some linebacker who had a similar skill set, Cornelius Bennett, you'd mm-hmm. kind of expect that. Just to see the contingent of not one, but three defensive tackles in Bills history to be mentioned like that. And then you want to throw a modern-day guy in. You know, you mentioned him earlier in the show, Kyle Williams.
Yeah.
You know, is a guy who's had a long, distinguished career here. And, oh, by the way, has very quietly accumulated 5 Pro Bowls in his 12-year career. 803-0550, the number to call. We go to Tom in North Tonawanda to lead us off. Tom, who do you have for your number two?
Hey, God bless. I think as a group, I would like the Bermuda Triangle, Haslett, Shane Nelson, and Freddie Smirlis. But behind them would Robert James. He wore number 20 for Buffalo and awesome, hard-hitting free safety, and unfortunately, he had his career ended in a preseason game against the Rams in Buffalo in 1975. He intercepted the pass, and as soon as he turned around to go upfield, Lawrence McCutcheon had him at a body block, had lined him up and messed up his leg, and that was it for his career. But he was one of the hardest-hitting defensive back. And then real quick, Mike Stratton. The shot heard around the world with Keith Lincoln. And, so I just wanted to share that with you all.
Yeah, we appreciate the call, Tom. A lot of nominees there in one phone call. Leave it to Tom in North Tonawanda to turn the debate on its ear. He just named three guys as one nominee. Breaking the rules here, Tom. You can't do that. But he wanted to mention the Bermuda Triangle, which featured Fred Smirlis as kind of the top of that triangle, if you will, you know, along with Nelson and Haslett. And Haslett was the defensive rookie of the year in 79, and, you know, his career was okay after that. His career took off immediately and then kind of leveled off after a while. But, you know, certainly a capable linebacker and a good player here.
Well, now, you know, I mean this question with no disrespect to the person. How good was Mike Stratton? Now, every time people bring up Mike Stratton, they talk about the hit heard around the world.
Yeah.
How good was he, though, as a player his whole career?
Well, I mean, he was an athletic player. And, again, I'm going off of highlight reels. I'm going off of interviews with a lot of his teammates that I've had over the years. I mean, six-time AFL All-Star. I mean, 6 years in a row, 63 to 68, you know, consecutively. Played here for 11 seasons. I think, was he on the All-AFL team? I'd have to check to see. But Stratton was something else. There's the MSG viewers are watching the hit heard around the world on our archive tape now. And, you know, he was on the two-time AFL championship teams. He was a quintessential part of the defense that pretty much carried them to two AFL titles in the mid-60s. You know, to what degree was, you know, was he an athletic freak? I can't speak to that. I don't know for sure. But certainly everybody I've talked to about him certainly holds him in high regard and felt he was probably one of the three best players on that defensive unit, which was, for Bills history, an all-time defensive unit. Maybe that a shutout in the AFL title game in 64. You can't do much better than that. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We go to John in Tonawanda. He's got a nominee for us for his number two. Who is it?
George Saints. I like George Saints because he was a hard hitter. And I remember, I don't know, Chris, if you could you remember back when the Bills used to have inter-squad games back in the early 60s. They had the white and the blue against the defense offense. And George Saints hit Cookie Gilchrist around the 25-yard line and hit him so hard he knocked his helmet off.
And that's saying something because Cookie was put together pretty well. I know a lot of talking to a lot of his former teammates, the thing that always came up with him was great tackler. They, like, to a man, all of his defensive teammates said, I never saw him miss a tackle.
It was tough.
Yeah. I mean, he wrapped you up. It was over, I mean, according to what everybody was saying.
Right. You know, another thing you were all talking about, you could almost name three of those guys that were on the 64, 65 defensive line. And I believe that 1 year they didn't allow one touchdown, rushing touchdown.
Not a rushing touchdown, correct. Yeah, you're right about that. Absolutely. John, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate the history lesson anytime we can get it from anybody that saw those 60s guys. The other thing was, in putting together this program, our guys in our video department at Buffalo Bills Entertainment, just hearing them edit the program, I kind of got little snippets in the room there about some comments and stuff. And one of the 60s players who was, you know, interviewed, you know, he was asked about a whole host of players from the 1960s, knowing any of these guys could wind up on the list. And he was talking about George, and he was saying, you know, whenever we played the Jets, Joe Namath would be looking at George Sames before the play.
Yeah.
And George knew that Namath was keying his offensive call and whether or not to check it based on what he saw Sames doing. And so when they said Sames would play mind games with Namath. Whenever he saw him looking at him before the snap, Sames would just look at him and smile. before to try to convince him, like, yeah. I know what you're going to do
we're
here.
Playing poker with
I him. Know what you're going to do here. You want to change the play? You want to change it? So those are cool little stories that I think you'll, you know, if George winds up being on this list tonight, and I don't see why he wouldn't. He's probably maybe one of the two best safeties in team history. Mm-hmm. So you'd like to think. And that's the other thing, too, because we've been talking about all these front seven defensive players
right.
who are meriting consideration for this top 10 list. Aside from Butch Byrd, who's the all-time interception leader, and George Sames, I mean, we've had a couple other guys mentioned, Leonard Smith, Henry Jones. Not too many defensive backs.
It's not.
Through the course of Bills history that people – Robert James is another guy that's been mentioned, but again, a career cut short due to injury, unfortunately. Not a ton of DBs on this list.
I wonder why that is. Now, you know, the game is different today where DBs can really have – they can make plays because they throw the ball around so much today.
Right.
But so if you, you know, go do this list again 20 years out, you might have some more DBs.
Right. I think if Antoine Winfield played his whole career here,
yeah,
he would have been on that list.
Marlon always talks about Antoine.
Pound for pound. I don't know if I've ever seen a harder hitter than Antoine Winfield. The guy was 5'8", 178 yeah. pounds, and he hit like a linebacker. I don't know who taught him how to tackle, but he came out of his shoe tops every time he hit somebody, and you knew it when he hit you because guys were knocked clean off their feet because he was so low to the ground.
Yeah.
He'd have that center of gravity that would get you up and off your feet, and you were down quick. And he was a great interview, too. He'd just give it to you straight. You know, if a season was going the wrong way, and unfortunately at that time it was, and he's like, yeah, we got three games left, but I think we're going to be home for Christmas. I'm mm-hmm. like, whoa.
Yeah, okay. Marlon always talks about Antoine.
Yeah.
You know, and him being probably the hardest hitting corner. They just don't make – I mean, the league is so different now. Everybody wants these taller, lanky
right.
corners. You know, they're not taking guys his size. His
and stature. He played – I mean, his rookie year – which was 99. He was on the number one defense in the league, the Bills' 99 defense, and he played the slot because
mm-hmm.
they still had Thomas Smith on one side, and I'm going to forget who was on the other side, but there was another starter on the other side, and he was the nickel as a rookie. Well, by the end of his rookie year, they had moved him outside, and, you know, people – back then, they didn't worry about a guy being 5'8", 5'9".
Right.
They just played on the boundary, and that was it. And he was fine. He was fine out there. He had no problem whatsoever, and – then you saw him tackle, you're like, ooh, shame he's not any bigger. He can play linebacker. Yeah,
right. I wonder if they'll ever go back to, you know, it's such a copycat league, and now everybody's trying to get these taller.
Oh, is it
going to
come back around again?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's not like.
Not anytime soon.
I know.
Not the way they're cranking out six-foot corners now.
It's crazy. I mean, it's like they're converting safeties to corners.
Yeah, and in this draft class alone, I think there were 21 guys drafted at cornerback who were over 6 feet tall. 21.
And it's not like, I mean, you've always had taller receivers playing.
Right.
You know,
but I think that's part of the reason why. They want guys that are long-limbed, mm-hmm. you know, that can compete for those jump balls, maybe reach to a back shoulder fade
yeah.
if they have the right position. So length and reach quickly becomes important. 803-0550, we're still taking calls on who your number two defensive player in Bills history of all time is. Bruce is number one. Who is your number two? We go to Tom in Buffalo. Tom, who do you have for us?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to argue with Ted Washington, but I would like to throw someone else in the mix that I know there's been a little bit said about, but I don't think enough, and that's Ron McDowell. Ron McDowell played 18 years in the league, played 8 years here before Roush traded him. He actually didn't.
Oh, it was longer than I thought. Okay.
Yeah, he traded him to Washington, and all he did in Washington was make the Redskins all-time team, not all-time defensive team, all-time team, in the 8 years that he spent there. In addition to that, he is the all-time leader in the league with 12 interceptions, third in safeties with three for defensive linemen. And in the 65 game, Collier was the first to play a drop-back defense where he dropped a defensive lineman off the line, and he had Tracy and Stratton blitzing. And San Diego never saw anything like that before. He dropped right back into coverage. As I recall, he knocked down at least two passes, but he certainly confused Hadle. back in those days. So truly, if it wasn't for Bonehead Rausch, I think there'd be no question that he might be the number two all-time as a player here.
Thank you for shedding light on that. I thought he had a shorter stint here in Buffalo, but eight seasons. He was first-team All-AFL 1966, which I believe was still here in Buffalo. And he had two Pro Bowls to his credit, played until 76, which was age 37. He missed the 75 season for what reason, I do not know. Oh, no, they have 14 games here. Yeah, he played 14 games in 75. But basically, let me see, one, two, they've only got him here for 4 years with the Bills. See, I didn't think it was eight. 4 years with the Bills, seven with Washington for a total of 11 years in the league. And, yeah, so, you know, I'm not going to, I mean, there's a lot of traction right now for Ron McDowell. And, I mean, again, a guy that neither of us saw, but, hey, I welcome the knowledge for those that did see him play, and obviously a defensive end that, you know, had a lot of talent just by what we're hearing from some of the callers today. And it's great to get that insight because, again, I'll take it all day long just to kind of get more familiar with, you know, some of the specifics of these players that you just can't get watching highlight reels and doing interviews. You get firsthand accounts. It's so much better.
Right, right. And for me, though, I still have to go back to Ted Washington, man. The dude played 12 of his 16 seasons. He played all 16 games.
Yeah.
Like, once again, for a dude that size, to do what he was able to do on a consistent basis and play all 16 games for that many seasons.
Big men don't play that long.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's usually 8-10 years if you're lucky.
Right.
Maybe another year or two you eke out if you've been relatively injury free your career.
He played 16.
But just grinding on those joints for that long,
right,
with that much weight, you know, carrying that much weight, it's usually too much for people to bear, but it wasn't for him. Bill in Buffalo. Bill's got a nominee for the number two defensive player of all time. Who do you have, Bill?
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
How about the 12th man?
Well, that's unique. That's a unique nominee. It's not a player. But I get what you're saying.
I think it's the biggest one Buffalo ever had.
Well, I'll say it's the most consistent and the cheapest.
Right. It's definitely the most consistent and the cheapest.
A unique perspective, Bill. We thank you for it. Yeah, I mean, I get what he's saying. You know, you're talking about how the crowd has impacted the game over the years and, you know, forced teams into false starts and you know, timeouts and, you know, unforced errors, so to speak, due to the volume. You know, I respect it. It's not a player.
Right.
You know, guys are getting a little creative here down the stretch as we
running out.
Knock this topic around.
Different, man.
Yeah. But we do have an open line for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We're asking you your number two defensive player of all time in Bills history. We all agree Bruce is number one. And as the list debuts tonight in episode 3 of the Bills all-time top 10 series on MSG tonight at 9 p.m., the latest installment is top 10 defensive players of all time. And we've had a healthy debate here today about who would be number two on that list. So I would say right now it's kind of a dead heat between – although we haven't had much support for this guy lately, is Cornelius Bennett. And I would still probably put Sestak in there with him. So you're on board with me, with Ted?
Ted.
Okay, because you and I have Ted Washington. We've had a couple of callers agree with us. But right now, that seems to be the three-horse race for the number two spot. There has been some support for George Sames. Mike Stratton has gotten, you know, a few votes. Ron McDowell has gotten a few votes, which is pretty impressive for a guy that only played 4 years in Buffalo, but was in the prime of his career here.
Even Aaron Williams got a vote.
He did, and that was
it was shocking.
It was surprising. His career was kind of star-crossed here.
Yeah, it was. You know, but if he would have been able to play a longer career here, he could have gone down. I mean, he had that talent. He was a playmaker back there at the safety position.
He just couldn't stay on the field.
Just couldn't stay on the field.
And it wasn't just the neck injury that compromised the last 2 years he was here. It was even before that, you know, with other little nicks and stuff that kept him out of the lineup. And he was trying to transition from corner to safety. And, you know, these injuries kept cropping up. And it compromised his development, you know, at the position. So it made it all the harder to do that. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We'll take another call here. I'm sorry, I didn't get the name for this, but calling from Orchard Park. Who do we have on the line here with a number two nominee?
This is Mark.
Mark, okay, good to have you. Who do you have?
It was Defensive Player of the Year for 1 year, Bryce Puff.
Okay.
To mention him, I don't remember how many years he played with the Bills.
Yeah, he wasn't here very long, and I think that's probably the biggest thing maybe working against him. What do you think? You're just going based on his Defensive Player of the Year naming?
No, because I think 2 years straight he played lights out. He was just there nonstop, and if I remember right, Bruce was hurt one of the years that he was out there.
Yeah, and I know Bryce also missed some time in his third year with the Bills. In fact, his career was compromised by a bad groin injury that never seemed to get better. But he played here 3 years, and the hope was he could come back in 98, but he just was not getting any better. Or, I'm sorry, he played in 96, got hurt, and then missed the last four games, came back in 97, and really, though he put together a 9.5 sack season, you know, it looked like time was kind of catching up with him a little bit. That's just my recollection of that, covering those teams from then. Just didn't seem like the same guy. But, yeah, I mean, 3 years here, he did pretty well. I mean, 17.5 sacks the year he won Defensive Player of the Year. Obviously, playing opposite Bruce Smith helps. And again, that's another part of this whole topic that we haven't discussed either. And we thank you for the call, Mark. But, you know, you think about some of these names that have been mentioned as top two candidates or number two candidates. Cornelius Bennett played opposite Bruce Smith. Ted Washington played alongside Bruce Smith. Fred Smirlis played with Bruce Smith early in his career. Tom Sestak's the only exception in terms of guys that didn't play with Bruce Smith, who's the number one guy and in the Hall of Fame. So do you take away from the candidacy or the legitimacy of Cornelius Bennett, Ted Washington, Fred Smirlis because of Bruce being on the field, one of the greatest defensive players in football history? Forget about Bill's history.
I think you still have to you have to give credit to those guys because Bruce is out there and teams are sliding to him, which might leave you one-on-one, but you still have to make the plays.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think you still have to give credit to those guys.
803-0550. We're happy to keep taking your nominations for the number two defensive player in Bills team history. It's part of that top 10 television series. Episode 3 airing tonight at 9 p.m. on MSG, the top 10 defensive players in team history. We want to know who your number two is after Bruce. Dan in Buffalo, Dave in Hamburg, Ryan, John on cell phones. Hang on, we'll get to you on the other side. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in all week for the vacationing John Murphy alongside Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show. Presented by Napa Auto Parts as we debate and debate and debate some more. The number two defensive player in Bills history. I've had a lot of great nominees today from the callers. We thank you for your participation, and we're going to continue there now as we got more people patiently waiting to chime in with their suggestions. And I think we have a new nominee coming from Dan in Buffalo. Dan, who do you have for us as your number two defensive player in Bills history?
Oh, hey, guys. Listen, I'm 40 years old, so I don't really remember much before the late 80s, but I'll go with a newer Bill, and I'm going to say Aaron Schobel. I think he was kind of a dominant defensive guy on a not-so-dominant Bills team for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he had a great knack to get to the quarterback, and he kind of reminded me of a mini Bruce Smith in a way. I'm no way comparing their careers, but just the way he would line up on the edge and just to see he used his speed and power, and he just made a beeline to the quarterback, and I think he made a pretty good career out of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, that's a fair nominee, I think, maybe for top 10 list. I don't know about number two.
Not number two.
You know, and I was here for all of Aaron's career, and, you know, I think he certainly filled the bill for what they wanted from that position, which at the time was mainly a 4-3 defense, and, you know, he was an important part of that 2004 defense that finished second in the league
right.
and had a host of talent on it. You know, you had Sam Adams. I think Pat Williams was still here. I want to say, yeah, I'm pretty sure Pat was still here. Sam Adams. And then you had Takeo Spikes, London yeah. Fletcher, Nate Clements. That was a stacked roster. Number two in the league on defense. I think they led the league in takeaways that year with 39 and had a host of sacks, too. And Shoal was a big part of that, led the team in sacks that year. So I think he merits consideration for the top 10 list. I don't know if he makes it. You know, I don't know. In my mind's eye, I kind of see him in that honorable mention category. But, yeah, I mean, and the thing about Aaron that I think was lost on a lot of people was he was more athletic than I think he was given credit for. And one play that sticks out in my head was the interception that he had. I can't remember if it was – I think it was a Monday night game in New England. Kyle Williams is rushing Tom Brady. He hits him as he tries to throw the ball on a screen pass out to the left, and Schoble's sitting there waiting, and he jumps high, like maybe 9-10 feet with his hand. His hand's 9-10 feet in the air. Bats the pass up, straight up in the air, catches it, and then runs 30 yards, and he's got a running back on his tail, the guy that went out for the screen pass,
yeah.
and just falls over the goal line into the end zone for an interception return for a touchdown. I thought that was the kind of play that spoke to just how athletic Aaron Schoble was. And as we were talking about earlier in the show, Aaron never met a weight room that he liked and didn't do a
so
whole
you
lot
can
of
only
training.
Imagine.
And I think it compromised the longevity of his
right.
career, and it's why he only played 8 or 9 years instead of maybe 11 or 12. But certainly an accomplished pass rusher, I don't think there's any question about that.
Now, since you brought that up, the whole honorable mention for the top 10 list. The question that I had for you was, name a guy who, debatable, should be on this list or not. A guy who was talented, but I don't know if he...
We're talking top 10 now.
Top 10, not number
yeah,
10.
I mean, I think Schoble's a guy you can mention. Nate Clements was a really talented cornerback that I think you could consider for this list. Just checked the number one receiver every week for the 4 or 5 years he was here. Maybe 6. I think he got franchised twice.
How long was London Fletcher here?
Fletch was here from 02 to 07 or 08.
Yeah.
So 6-7 seasons. Guy never missed a game. Rack was the leading tackler, I think, every year he was here. I think he had one season. He had over 200 tackles. I mean, defense was on the field a lot that year, but...
Yeah.
I think, you know, you could probably throw him in there. Did Takeo play here long enough? Probably not. And his 2005 season was killed by the Achilles tendon injury when he ruptured that in week 3 against Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But he made 2 Pro Bowls in his time here. So he's probably just outside the top 10. I don't know if I've ever seen a player more passionate about the game than Takeo Spikes.
Yeah.
I mean, game day, it was like Wednesday, and this guy was already frothing at the mouth. Like, I'm thinking, this guy's not going to have anything left by the time he gets to Sunday. But then he'd get out there on Sunday, and he'd be dominating.
And be lights out.
He was unbelievable.
For me, he's the one guy, when you're young and you, like, think of a prototypical football player, his neck just comes into
it. It just kind of melted into his shoulders.
Right.
He didn't really have one.
He didn't have one, man. It's like, what is that?
He's the only guy whose ears touched his shoulder pads because there was no neck there. It was unbelievable. But just a great guy, really. Not just a great player, just a passionate person who loved to compete and was ready to do anything and everything. And guys followed him. Guys followed him. He was a really, really good leader.
We had him on the show. We had him on the show.
You're ready to
back.
Go put a helmet on after you
I'm
talk to him.
I'm telling you, when you talk to him, it was like, man, this dude is – he makes me want to go back and suit up. Yeah.
Intense is probably the best word to describe Takiyo Spikes. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to John in his cell. He's got a nominee or two for us. Who do you have?
Ken Washington, of course, I think, everyone's favorite to be number two. But I wanted to echo something one of your earlier callers said about Ron McDowell.
Yeah.
Actually, and I'm reading it from Wikipedia and from Pro Football Reference, he did play 8 years for the Bills. He played a total of 18 years in the league. And he did play 8 years for the Bills from 63 to 70. And from 64 to 68, he had at least one interception in every game. Every season, I'm sorry, not in every game.
Okay, you know what I did? I'm looking at Pro Football Reference too, but the mistake I made was I looked at his playoff game history, which obviously had some years missing, the years that he didn't make the playoffs. So you are correct, and I will stand corrected on that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yes, 8 years in a Bills uniform. So thanks for making that correction for us. Again, the history gets lost on me because it's history for me, not real life experience. So thank you, John, for doing that. I appreciate the correction. 8 years now that I'm looking at it, because I was looking at the exact same site that he was, but I was looking at his playoff history, mm-hmm. which came up on my scroll. I obviously scrolled way too far. But, yeah, he played until 1978, 39 years old. And, you know, 8 years in Buffalo, I think that's certainly long enough to get on the list. I mean, Ted Washington only played here 6 years. So
definitely long enough.
I mean, Ron McDowell is getting a lot of nominations here, which makes me almost want to try to dig up, you know, Ron McDowell footage. But that's easier said than done for the guys that played in the 60s. But, yeah, I mean, and the thing that catches my eye, just looking up and down his statistics, are the interceptions. And I know one of the previous callers mentioned the fact that he had 12 interceptions in his career. He had, let's see here, he had six of those in a Bills uniform. He had like one every year from 64 to 68 when he had two in 68. But
now, the committee that actually did this whole thing,
of which I was not a part.
You were
just
not a
stay
part of.
Out in front.
All right, so
you're gonna get out in front of this, and say I was not.
Was this
on the internal committee?
Was this a lot of older or younger people that were on this committee?
I honestly don't even know who made up the committee. I don't know who was on the committee. It was completely in secret.
I have
not been privy to the details of the formation right. nor the members of said committee. I think they're fearful that Bills fans are going to come after them if they
right.
If Ron McDowell's not on the top 10 list tonight, there's going to be some unhappy people.
It's definitely going to be some unhappy.
And I would say,
but I feel like you're going to, if you have a committee of younger guys, then you might have, you know, more of like the 90s teams and the later generations.
Yeah.
And if you have a committee of older guys that might, you know, really remember
right.
the 60s and the 70s.
I would like to think that even if the majority of the committee members were not witness to the teams of the 60s, they would at least do their due diligence
yeah.
to properly, you know, inform themselves to make proper decisions. And, you know, the people that put the videos together, you know, down the hall in our video department – did the legwork. I mean, these guys were all over. I think they were in like 13, 14 different states doing sit-down interviews with Bills alumni, asking them about their teammates. So we're getting firsthand accounts of players who not only watched their teammates play, but sat in meeting rooms with them,
yeah.
were teammates with them. I mean, really had the ins and outs of just what kind of players they were. We're going to go back to the phones. We go to Ryan on a cell. Ryan's got a number two nominee for us. Who is it, Ryan?
Hey, Chris and DJ. My nomination is Phil Hansen, another guy from like the Super Bowl era. Just a great player. I'll hang up and listen to what you guys got to say. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, and you're not the first guy to mention Phil Hansen either. And as we were saying, you know, just a real lunch pail player. And, you know, for fans too young to remember the kind of player that Phil Hansen was, I would liken him to a Kyle Williams in terms of approach to the game. Just a guy that put it all out there every Sunday. You never went to the stadium on a Sunday wondering what Phil Hansen was going to give you, because you knew you were going to get his best every time. And in a town like Buffalo, that goes a long way with fans when you got a lunch pail player like that. Let's try to take one more call here before a break. Let's go to, I think this is Nate in Wyoming. Is it Nate in Wyoming?
Yeah, can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you all right. I just don't know if I had the name right or not.
Yep, it's Nate.
Okay, what do you got for us? Who's your nominee?
Someone I want to bring up. I don't know if it would be number two necessarily, but one of my favorite players would be Nate Clemens.
Yeah.
Played 6 years with the Bills.
Yeah, Nate, Donald and I were just talking about him. So what appeals to you, and what do you think at least makes him worthy to be on the list?
Well, just the fact that it seems, if I remember correctly, seems like he played every game when he was here for his 6 years and was a major contributor to the 2004 Bills defense.
Right.
You know, that was outstanding. You know, had plenty of interceptions, passes, defense.
Yeah, he was usually one of the interception leaders on the team. I think almost every year he was here. He was either tied for the team lead in interceptions or had it outright. And, you know, some years were a little leaner than others. Maybe it was only four picks 1 year. He liked picks. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this. I remember
all
one game.
Do.
Well, yeah, but I remember one game against Jacksonville that the Bills lost here at home, and I think it was 2003. Clements on fourth down goes for the pick, doesn't get it, and the receiver whose name is going to escape me, I want to say it might have been Keenan McCardell, he comes down with the pass, first down, new set of downs, the drive's alive, and the Bills end up losing that game 13-10. When it was just, knock it down, Nate.
Yeah, knock it down.
But
get off the field.
But on the whole, I mean, he was a solid corner, and like I was saying earlier, had to. I mean, he drew the number one assignment every single week, and you know, I got to think for a corner. I mean, you like those challenges, but
every week though,
you think about,
like,
the talent in the NFL, and yeah, it's just, man, like, I got this guy this week. All right, well, I'll be able to hold my own. But by the time you get to week 14, 15, you're like, man, another one. What
another
the heck?
One.
You know. Chad Johnson. Oh, my God. Next week. Terrell Owens. What? Come on. Like,
yeah. That's, I mean, truth.
That's,
I mean,
that's tough work, man.
The talent at the receiver position is just, it's so big, so strong, so fast.
Not to mention they're going
so
forward
good,
and I'm going in reverse.
You're going in reverse. And, you know, the QBs are so good where they can put it where they want
right.
to put it. And for you to have to be the guy that has to lock down that number one guy every week, whew. I mean, I feel like now – you're seeing less and less of those true lockdown corners. You're seeing more of system left-right corners, you know? Like, and some of the better corners in the game today aren't the guys that follow the number one receivers. They're just regarded as, you know, one of the best because they make plays in their system.
Right. I think the most interesting thing today with the nominees that have come from the Bills secondary, Butch Bird aside, mm-hmm. is that there was more calls for Robert James – than maybe a modern-day player like a Nate Clemens. We really only
yeah.
had this last call.
Last
was the
one.
First one
yep.
for Nate Clemens here at the end of the show, and we've had at least four calls for Robert James, which I just think speaks to the kind of player that he was. And, you know, unfortunately, injury cuts his career short. We even had a caller tell us how and when his career ended. He recited the play. So it's really been a nice history lesson for Donald and I. So we appreciate all the calls today and all the nominees you presented. Don't forget, it's 9 p.m. tonight on MSG, top 10 defensive players in Bills history. Donald and I take a break, but back to wrap it up. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Well, we had Ted Washington on the show today, former Bills nose tackle, three-time Pro Bowler, and he talked about how he benefited from playing alongside Bills teammates like Bruce Smith and Phil Hansen.
I benefit from it, but my thing was more the how they played. Bruce Arnett made his name, and those were playmakers. Mm-hmm. Linebackers with Cornelius Bennett, all those guys, they were playmakers. I wanted to be a playmaker. I they want their names to just get in the paper and not me. I'm not just going to sit and take a block and watch them get all the glory. So I had to step it up another notch. Not only take on the blocks, but make plays. And that's what, pretty much what I did.
And Ted was a great guest today. We thank him for spending some time with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. I tell you, he wasn't afraid to give it to you straight.
What?
Some things never change with that guy.
No. No.
Yeah.
I was not going to be second to any of these guys.
Didn't want to take a back seat. He might be second on this list tonight, though. If he's going to be second anywhere, it's going to be at least on this list tonight, the top 10 defensive players of all time, airing on MSG tonight at 9 p.m., the latest installment of the Bills' top 10 television series. We thank our people on the other side of the glass, or in this case, the other side of the door. Our board op at the Entercom Studios, Brayton Wilson, production assistance by J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenak, Tom Hollander. Our executive producer is Jay Harris, show contributor Ryan Dukearm. That'll do it for Monday's show. We'll be back for Tuesday's edition tomorrow, The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.